All right, let me jump on into today's Right Side Way opening monologue. I'll just remind you guys, as always, that attorney Stan McDonald, Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. He's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law in North Alabama. And listen, I'll tell you more about Stan in a few minutes, but he's a longtime conservative and daily sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. All right, let me just start by saying we have never shied away from the culture wars. We talk about politics, certainly. We talk about economics. We talk about fiscal policy. We talk about all kinds of things. We talk about defense. But we have also never shied away from the culture wars. A story broke yesterday that I look at and I think, why? So the story is that the New Jersey Education Association, which is the teachers union for the state of New Jersey, is preparing to host an event. Okay. You might think it would surely be about education, right? I mean, they are the New Jersey Education Association. Maybe it's to provide continuing ed for teachers, or maybe it's about best practices in a classroom instruction. Well, how about no to all the above? Because the New Jersey Teachers Union is hosting an event next month to, quote, celebrate the vibrant world of drag for public school teachers. Okay. It's billed as an event that will emphasize the need to, quote, ignite creativity in the classroom and show that drag is what education is all about. Look, I don't know what the Garden State's growing in its gardens, but somebody needs to take a step back from the gummies is what I'm saying. By the way, this is the same organization that just endorsed the Democrat Mickey Sherrill for governor. What's the point of this, by the way? I'll be honest with you, it's got nothing to do with education. Nothing at all. Or wait. Or does it? I submit that it has everything to do with education when you consider that what it is they're trying to do is educate kids about their agendas. For the progressive left, it's always about the agenda. They'll justify any means to get their desired ends. And there was a time, by the way, not so long ago, when this kind of overt, over-the-top inserting of cartoonish and yet harmful characters into the lives of kids was not only deemed unacceptable, it was actually illegal. It's amazing how certain things have become acceptable and certain things have also fallen from acceptance. Culture has a way of shifting with the winds. It's not always a good thing. I mean, the fickle whims of culture should never be a measuring stick for what's right. If it were the left, they would have trashed the Constitution years ago, remember? I remember that both of my grandfathers, here we go, here's my thing about what's fallen from grace. Both of my grandfathers were smokers for most of their lives, and both of them had strokes in their later years and they quit smoking overnight. My maternal grandfather, he smoked Bel Airs. Remember them? Bel Airs. Packs came with a Raleigh Bel Air coupon. If you saved them up, you could buy some pretty cool stuff from the Raleigh Bel Air catalog. My paternal grandfather, he smoked filterless Camels. They were rough. Don't ask me how I know. I mean, it's not like I ever snuck out back and smoked one behind the house when I was 11 years old or something like that. Never happened. Or did it? Anyway, Granddaddy smoked those Camels regularly, but Granny made him sit out on the porch and not smoke them inside. But both brands marketed their wares to just the kind of men my grandfathers were. The Bel Airs that my granddad on my maternal side smoked, they were endorsed by movie tough guy Lee Marvin, but they had a sharp image and a progressive kind of futuristic logo, which was just right for my grandfather, who was an Army general, an engineer who worked on missiles and the original hydrogen bombs. Camels, on the other hand, they were tough, no-nonsense, filterless, kind of a working man's smoke, also fitting then for my other grandfather, who was a steel worker and grew up in a family in the hardscrabble Depression-era South. See, marketing is everything. And I'm getting back to my point in a minute about things that are considered okay now that weren't okay before. But back then on cigarettes, marketing, it was everything. Cigarettes, like I said, no different than any other product trying to find a way to appeal to a broad audience in a competitive market. But in that vein, let's talk about this. In that vein of marketing, along came a suave and debonair dude. You know, the guy that every guy wanted to be like. He had all the ladies, all the cool factor, drove the best cars. He was like James Bond, the Marlboro Man, and Audie Murphy all rolled into one. He was also a cartoon character designed to sell cigarettes. His name was simply Joe the Camel. So Joe Camel was a branding mascot for Camel cigarettes, and he was first used in Europe in the mid-70s, but he burst into the U.S. advertising scene in 1988. He immediately became one of the most recognized advertising images. At one point, the Journal of the American Medical Association conducted a study, found that Joe Camel was instantly recognizable by 91% of all children who participated in the study. That was more than Mickey Mouse. And the same children associated Joe Camel with cigarettes. Within 3 years of Joe Camel becoming synonymous with Camel cigarettes, another study concluded that Camel's underage smokers had grown by nearly 38%. Well, in 1992, a San Francisco attorney filed suit against the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company, the parent company of Camel, alleging that Camel was in fact targeting underage citizens with the sole intent of increasing their market share among teens. Within the text of the suit against the tobacco giant was the allegation that Reynolds Tobacco had grown their profits from underage smokers from $6 million to over $476 million in just 4 years. So Democrat California Congressman Henry Waxman, he actually pressed Congress to take action, which resulted in the Federal Trade Commission conducting a series of three separate investigations over several years, eventually resulting in a finding that R.J. Reynolds had unreasonably and knowingly targeted underage citizens. Huh. All through a cartoon character, right? But then the smoking gun actually emerged. In the mid-90s, an older 1974 R.J. Reynolds internal marketing department presentation. Internal. The very section that dealt with targeting young voters, you know, 14 years old and up. They found the memo and it talked about, quote, the growing importance of the young adult in the tobacco market. That this age group would represent 27% of their adult market by 1975. And it said that, quote, these are the smokers of tomorrow. Aha! So in 1997, R.J. Reynolds actually had to retire Joe the Camel. And they went back to a more mundane historical image of a simple and more true-to-life representation of a real camel. So Joe the Camel actually outraged the authorities. Think about that. His influence on children was seen as dangerous. The intent in having such a likable cartoon mascot was simply to cultivate a strong first and early impression and to create what R.J. Reynolds' own study designated as smokers of tomorrow. And that gets me back to drag queens now. Why would the teachers' union be hosting a drag show and saying that drag is a part of education? Isn't it amazing? Don't you wish that the worst thing upon us these days was the idea of a cartoon camel just teaching kids to smoke? I find it deeply disturbing that in my lifetime, it was a lawyer and a congressman from California, no less, who saw fit to lead a charge against a major corporate entity because they felt the corporation was enticing kids, trying to lure them into a lifestyle, like literally grooming kids to be the next generation of smokers. Well, what do you think they're doing with drag queens? Because now we have drag queens performing at so-called family-friendly events. We're told that to question that is tantamount to domestic terrorism. Parents and concerned citizens who dare to question drag queen story hour and things like that, or complain or worse yet protest against the idea of men cross-dressing in hypersexualized women's clothing with exaggerated female characteristics. I mean, like literally lampooning and objectifying women that somehow or another when they dance provocatively while making lewd remarks, or that to oppose that distorted behavior is a gross affront to the rights of the gay community? Come on. What you're looking at is absolute enticement of children. That's what they want. Never mind the simple fact, a fact that requires very little effort to mentally assent to, by the way, that parents should always be wary of men who dress as women and dance and speak provocatively to children. I mean, why would you not? There's nothing normal or comfortable about any of that. And yet they come, often by invitation, to schools and libraries and community centers, and at the request even of the teachers' union, to host drag queen shows. Has anyone ever asked, by the way, why the makeup is needed to read stories? I mean, if you're not really about the reading, just say so. But everyone knows they're doing it for the simple and clearly stated purpose of grooming the next generation. That's what they're doing. They're attempting to normalize abnormal and unhealthy behavior. How do I know this? Because they say so themselves. It's no different than finding that secret R.J. Reynolds internal memorandum where they said smokers of tomorrow. You can go to Drag Story Hour's website. It's actually on a website, Drag Story Hour website, and you can see the mission statement on their website. It says this. Here, I'm going to read it to you. It says, quote, storytellers use the art of drag to read books to kids in libraries, schools, and bookstores. Drag Queen Story Hour captures the imagination and the play of gender fluidity of childhood and gives kids glamorous, positive, and unabashedly queer role models. In spaces like this, kids are able to see and defy rigid gender restrictions and imagine a world where everyone can be their authentic selves. Okay, let me get that straight. They just said that their purpose is to be a role model, a queer role model, for children. The concept of being a role model should be to encourage others to emulate behavior, right? to follow the example set by the role model. In short, the leadership of Drag Story Hour admits their sole purpose is to create the next generation of drag queens. Ask yourself this question. Why is that any different than Joe the Camel? And yet, my God, how I wish that Joe Camel was all we had to worry about. The Teachers Union in New Jersey is hosting a drag story, the whole drag show, just to try and prove that drag is a part of education. It's not. It's an absolute enticement. And I wonder, have we as a nation gone so far down the path of depravity and indifference that we don't see the irony in knowing that Joe the Camel is considered bad, but men dressing up as women performing sex acts in front of children is not? Joe the Camel. He's got nothing on drag queens. He's probably less harmful, too, if you get down to it. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way.